Thank you, Mark, for the introduction, and thanks, CEDA, for running this event today. So briefly today, I want to talk about Saab Australia, purely because it's a great example of what defence companies have been doing and will continue to do here in South Australia. And I'll finish up at the end with a bit of a SWOT analysis, very high level, to look at some of the strengths and weaknesses of the industry itself. So Saab itself, unfortunately, if you look at this slide, it provides an overview of the products we make. Everything from surveillance aircraft to fighter jets. The Rex aircraft you see flying in and out of here are Saab aircraft. The airport systems we use across most of the airports here in Australia control airports or aircraft on the ground are Saab equipment. The ports, many of the ports in Australia, including the Barrier Reef, use Saab products. We make ships that can defeat radar. Very low observable. We make submarines that go into the water and a whole bunch of drones that go into the water as well. So, in short, it's a large number of portfolio of products in the defence technology space. If I just look at what's been achieved in the last 30 years since Saab set up operations in Australia, and particularly around human capability. We now have about just over 450 people in across the nation. Most are gathered here in South Australia. 3,000 years plus of cumulative engineering experience, and that's just the experience that they've gained in Saab. It doesn't include all the years of experience they've had before joining Saab. And if you see on the right-hand side there, a large core of the organisation are engineers. And in fact, we run on engineers, and particularly software engineers, absolutely critical to the business. Look at the products we do around Australia. Predominantly, the business is maritime combat systems. So they're not the bits that control the ships and steer it. They're the brains that fight the ships. So as you hear about hypersonic missiles and you hear about these evolving threats and laser systems that are being used today to target ships and aircraft, the systems we put onto ships, all of the Australian ships we have a role in and will into the future, those systems are designed to connect all the sensors up, the radars and all the other sensors they have on board, fuse all that information together to allow the commanders to see what's going on around them and then use the weapons to their best effects to protect that ship and the other groups and elements that that ship are protecting. So it's fairly complex work and you want to make sure you get it right. Based on what we did here in Australia, we've also been exporting. Now, often you hear about defence exports. People think about widgets, making products and sending them overseas. What is less obvious is the skills and knowledge that we have. So one example on the bottom right-hand corner, we talk about Thai new frigate. That's being built for Thailand by a Korean shipbuilder. Korean shipbuilder has subcontracted Saab in Sweden to do the combat system for it. But there is technology going into that ship, particularly US technology, that the Swedes don't have access to, but we in Australia do. So right today, we've got engineers in Australia installing, setting to work and testing sensitive US technologies in a Korean shipyard that's going to go in service with the Thai Navy. And that's the type of future that the defence industry will provide here in South Australia and into the region. We've also done exports around the globe, whether it be to New Zealand, whether it be to Canada and a number of other countries as well. Look in the land domain, radars, sensors again, and also the effectors, the rocket launchers, the missiles to protect that as well. So it's fairly interesting equipment, and as I said, you want to make sure you get it right. Again, based on the skills we learnt in the combat system space, building those brains to protect a ship and shoot down a supersonic sea-skimming missile, we applied that into the security space. So starting with a blank piece of paper about 8 years ago, a group of the teams got together and they thought they'd build a security system that protects critical infrastructure and particularly prisons. So they're now, 8 years later, installed in four prisons, three in Australia, one in New Zealand. We've got a number of other prisons underway in New South Wales, including the Grafton Prison, which is the biggest prison in Australia. We've also extended that into protecting defence bases as well, and 16 of Australia's defence bases are protected by Saab's technology. We're doing work now branching into hospitals. So what used to be the Lady Salento Hospital in Brisbane, now the Queensland Children's Hospital, has now got a Saab system that runs, controls the security systems there. So we've applied that, and like many companies in the defence space, and as Colin was talking to earlier on, the high technology and the thinking that goes on can extend into other markets as well. And after 30 years, that's what we're now seeing with the Saab workforce. Talking about defence industry as a whole, some years ago we were down to about 1.5% of GDP, but there's now been the commitment, bipartisan commitment, to return that to 2% GDP by the early 2020s. So there's more money pouring into the industry. And what's more and equally important is that the industry policy has now changed. So previously there wasn't such an emphasis on doing the work in Australia and getting the economic benefits from it, but now that's completely changed. And so the industry policy is now seeing that the companies coming into Australia to do work have to spend more of that in Australia. So the pipeline is opening up into the industry very quickly. So there's a lot of money pouring in, a lot of opportunities that are opening up. So when I look to the high-level SWOT analysis, very high-level, it highlights a couple of key points. One is the duration of the programs. I talk about Saab being here for 30 years. We had people start here in Saab as graduates and as engineers 30 years ago. They're still in Saab today. They're still working on the same project today. And when they retire, the ship that they've been working on, the Anzac-class ship, will still be at sea. So when we talk about the Hunter-class frigate that's being built here or the Attack-class submarines, you know, it's my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren that potentially will have opportunities to work on those programs because that's the longevity of those programs. Long after they're built, they'll be serving for 30 or 40 years after that. The other point to make is that it's high-tech jobs and manufacturing. And whilst there is a focus on welders and a lot of the mechanical skills, which is extremely important work, but you'll see by companies like Saab, the Lockheed Martins, the Raytheons, etc., it's the high-tech software engineering skills that allow you to apply those skills into adjacent markets that really create enormous value, both now and into the future. My one point I'll take away, I'd ask you to take away from today, if you take away anything from my presentation, and I focus this particularly because I know we've got some Saints girls here today attending, which is great to see. Ellie and Faye here, I think you're up on the back tables there somewhere. The message to take home is that when I look across the boards and the roles that I'm involved in, particularly the SACE board that I sit on, the training and skills board that looks after all the traineeships and apprenticeships here in South Australia, I don't see the upswing that's going to provide the skilled workforce that we're going to need in the early 2020s when these programs start ramping up. BAE will go from a couple of hundred people to a couple of thousand people just in the shipbuilding program. Naval Group will go from about 100 people to about 1,500 people. About 86% of the people involved in these shipbuilding jobs are going to need about 3 to 9 years of industry experience. So we needed to start training these people yesterday, i.e. a couple of years ago, to be ready for this upswing. And it's not to say there's a lot being done. There is an enormous amount being done. There's a lot of money that's being invested, and certainly the $203 million that state and federal are putting into apprenticeships and traineeships is absolutely critical. But where we're missing is the cut through and the breakthrough to the kids of today, the students of today, to be driving them down and encouraging them down the STEM-related studies and STEM-related careers, which allow them to then feed this high-tech workforce. So if you take away one point today, please take away that point, that we've got to keep doing more and more work to build the skilled workforce that we're going to need in order to harness those opportunities. And the flip side is, if we don't have the workforce here, if we can't build it here, if we can't encourage people to come to our state and be a part of these opportunities, then companies will do what companies do, which is they will break the work up and they will partition the work and they'll get it done elsewhere where they can get the workforce. And we've already seen that in one program on the eastern states. Company won a big contract located up in Queensland. Their core workforce was down in Melbourne. Funnily enough, the Melbourne workforce didn't want to move to Queensland. They're happily ensconced down there with families and lives and other things that were important to them. So the companies now had to break up engineering packages and work and get that done in Melbourne. If we're not careful, the same thing will happen here. So there's a wonderful opportunity. If we get in at the ground floor, there are not just years, not just decades, but we're talking 50 to 100 years of work ahead of us and great opportunities and skills. But we've got to have the skilled workforce to do it. Thank you.